This WebmasterRadio.fm program is made possible in part by the following.
AFCON 2010, the trade show that you know our affiliates always attend for free, is making its way to Denver June 21st through the 23rd. How would you like to come to AFCON 2010 and not pay a single penny? AFCON 2010 presents the AFCON 2010 Fully Free Experience Sweepstakes. Go to AFCON2010.com/sweepstakes. You can win round-trip airfare, a three-night stay at the Hyatt Regency Convention Center Hotel, and VIP access to all sessions, exhibits, and WebmasterRadio.fm's affiliate bash. All you have to do is sign up now at AFFCON2010.com/sweepstakes. Be one of the thousands in the affiliate marketing community that are making the switch to AFCON 2010, the trade show that's free for all affiliates, June 21st to the 23rd in Denver. Register today at AFFCON2010.com.
The opinions expressed on this WebmasterRadio.fm program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WebmasterRadio.fm. Any rebroadcast or retransmission of this program without the express written consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.
Feeling better? Looking better? Making life better? It's Life Tips. We'll explore the latest innovations, introduce you to the latest products, and bring you the tips from experts and environmental pioneers to help you lead a better life. Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, wiser. Here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Life Tips Show, everybody. I'm here with Eric Qualman. Eric, happy to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me here. It's great to be here.
Right on. Now, Eric, you are the author of Socialnomics, How Social Media Transforms the Way We Live and Do Business. You're also a professor at Hult International School of Business that has a new program, and a master's degree program in Masters of Digital Program, which I want to hear about. But before we hear about that, tell us a little bit about your book, when you wrote it. I know it was a number one bestseller on Amazon. Give us the scoop on the book.
Yeah, so the book Socialnomics, it was fortunate to go to number one on Amazon, both in the United States and also in the United Kingdom for all of marketing books. So it's been fun to see that go up, and it kind of gave me credibility that I wasn't crazy, because I got in the space a long time ago before it became a big deal, and I thought it was going to become a big deal, and now it is. So it's nice to see kind of everyone show up, and I wasn't crazy back in the day. So it's been fun to see that. But essentially, Socialnomics is really how is social media, it changes the way we do business, but at a fundamental shift, it also changes the way we as human beings live and interact with each other. And obviously, conversely, that flows into business because humans buy from humans. And so it's a good thing to see that coming to light, that now it's not just me buying from some big, big edifice and some giant, giant building. I'm actually purchasing from people at other companies.
Mm. Hey, that's an interesting point you're landing on as well. You know, in the inbound marketing world, as they say, cold calling is perhaps a dying breed and interrupting people throughout the day. You know, do you think that we're entering an age where it's all about who you know and how you communicate and being a good person and being passionate about what you're doing every day, including what you're selling? Is that part of perhaps what social media is all about and the economics of social media?
Yeah, by all means. I mean, we're not there yet, but we can see we're making giant strides to get there. And that's a lot of what the book discusses, and is that essentially, just like we no longer search for the news finds us, meaning that we're not really buying the New York Times in paper format anymore. We're getting pushed news from our friends and peers of what they think we'll find of relevance. And so it's a beautiful thing on the news side. But the same thing is starting to happen on the products and services side, from where I care less about what the Google algorithm says when I do a search, and I care more about what have my friends used, what have they used and decided to buy, what have they like, what don't they like. And that's not a new construct. That's word-of-mouth marketing. But what I talk about in the book is it really goes to word-of-mouth marketing, because now, because of tools like social media, is we're starting to see it begin that step, but we're going to start to have it a year or 2 years from now to where we no longer search for products and services. They actually find us via our friends and family and peers.
Do you think that there is a new platform by which we will buy products and services in 5 to 10 years from now, maybe a little bit more advanced? Will we make purchasing decisions based upon what are you thinking, how other people perceive that product or what our friends might recommend about it? You know, will the role of social media be a much greater influence on what we buy, in your opinion?
It's going to be a huge influence. That's when companies kind of sit there and go, what's the ROI of social media? They're sometimes myopically looking at it from how they've always measured ROI. And so sometimes I glibly state, what's the ROI of your phone? Or I'll say, the ROI of social media is that your company's going to exist in 3 to 5 years from now. That's the ROI of social media. And so your question exactly is we're going to see that. We're already seeing it with tools like Blippi, which tracks everything that you use from your credit card. We saw it in 08, actually, as early as that, with Facebook Beacon, where they rolled out the capability to track your purchases online. They rolled it out poorly. That's the example that was given, was the kid that bought the engagement ring for a soon-to-be fiancé. She found out about it via Facebook because it alerted her that he'd made this purchase. But we're starting to see that progress even more. If you look at TripAdvisor, that's a great site. The limitations of TripAdvisor or of an Amazon is that you didn't really know who made those ratings. And so what social media is enabling is that you're going to know who rated that hotel 4 or 5 stars. That's a big difference maker for a user, because you might get 100 reviews in general for that hotel, but then you have 10 that say, hey, here's 10 people that you actually know. They're in your social network, and here's how they rate it. And so you're going to see that for every product and service. And so it's going to be a beautiful thing from a standpoint of the customer's going to win, the user's going to win, and also the companies that produce great products of value are going to win. And if you look at it too, at a much grander scale, I call it multiple individual redundancy. If, say, you're buying a child seat for your first child for your car, you don't really know where to begin, and it's kind of a daunting task. So you have to do a lot of research and dig down and figure out where to buy that seat, which one you're going to purchase. So that's several hours of research that's done for that. And you do several hours of research when you're trying to find the hotel in the Bahamas where you're going to stay for seven days. But as you look forward into like a socialnomic world, the difference is you eliminate that multiple individual redundancy, because if 10 to 20 of my friends have already purchased a child seat that they like, or they've stayed at a hotel where they like in that area that I'm traveling to, then I've got confidence in just repeating what they've already done. They've already done the research. And so it's a beautiful thing from a societal standpoint of all of those wasted hours get repurposed into society.
Is there a limit, however, to how much value we can put on somebody else's opinion, particularly not knowing much about that person? Maybe it's somebody I met at a trade show, or maybe it's just one of the 1,500 people I'm LinkedIn on. And trust me, I don't have 1,500 friends in my life. You know, so, you know, these are acquaintances or people I met in the business world or whatever. But, you know, how much value can we really put on opinions? Do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. You're seeing tools like Facebook, or companies like Facebook, they're starting to come out with different tools that will allow you to kind of, to your point, Byron, is that you say, okay, here, this person's in my top 30 ring. So you start to kind of put in different parameters for the folks that you have. If you do have 1,500 friends on Facebook, they don't all go into one lump bucket. They actually go into different categories that you have control over, so that you can see it even going further and robust from a standpoint of, okay, just show me the friends that I've marked as trusted for movies. And so if I go in and do a review, figure out which movies I want to watch, it only comes back with the friends that I've starred and say, I want the opinions of the people that I've starred for movies. Now, that's getting a little granular. You probably won't dig down that deep, but it's just showcasing that's what these companies, the social networks tools and social media companies, are starting to vet out, not only privacy pieces, but also just giving the user more control over their large amount of friends that they may have in that particular network, if that makes sense.
It does. It seems extremely complex, and that's the problem I think we have with the simple notion of like a Twitter, you know, is that, you know, oh, wow, it's cool. I can learn what people are doing. I can learn what people are saying about my company. I can learn. But isn't there a problem with that? I mean, people are individuals. You know, some people love what they do. Some people hate what they do. Some people have different personalities. Some people like to be very frugal with their life. Some people like to spend wildly. You know, there's such a diverse group of interest and personas and influences and behaviors. How can we learn and listen to that activity and do something with it that's more personalized for herself. And I keep coming back to this word personalization. Is the next step of social media, you know, personalize social media so I can truly listen and be influenced by the people that matter most to me and that have chosen a life path like mine?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And it'll be interesting to see. I think that's where we're going to go. The question is, how is it done? It might be done on both levels, to where there's tools that enable you to do that, which you said could be fairly complex, or it might be just each individual takes a step back, because we're all different, right? So some people might be fine with, I have 1,500 friends and I want all their opinions, whereas you and I might say, okay, this doesn't make any sense. I just want to have it. I'm going to cut my friend list down to 100. Or what you see in today's society is that there's tools like Friendfree or aggregator tools that allow you to aggregate all your different social media tools into one interface, but they're actually not very popular. The reason is because most people do dissect stuff and bisect it, as you mentioned, Byron, to where my LinkedIn is completely different from my Facebook. Facebook might be more personal, what I'm updating about my dog, my favorite sports team I'm following, where that's completely different. I have a lot of crossover to my Twitter account, which might be all business related, to where all my tweets are only about social media. And then if you look at your LinkedIn account, maybe even that's drilled down even a tighter on how you do it. So you see people already doing that and using the tools that way. So that's why you don't see these aggregation tools really taking off, because to your point is that sometimes we want to have these different fences around different stuff.
And if you look at search in general, it's dumbfounding to me that we haven't seen more advancement, you know, even from a Google on, hey, I'm searching the web using Google. Do I want to search for informational resources? Do I want to search for e-commerce websites? Do I want to search for, Twitter posts from friends? I mean, I cannot believe that we haven't seen a more sophisticated Google interface that would allow us to segment what we're looking for. Do you agree with that problem?
I agree 100% with you. It's one thing that I discuss at length. It's a beautiful thing of social media from a standpoint of now more and more people are realizing it, is that a couple of years ago indicating that, hey, Google understands their competition is not Bing, it is not Yahoo. Their competition is Wikipedia, Facebook, Twitter. It's social media that's their main competitor. And it's a beautiful thing because Google has not adjusted their algorithm over time, which, God bless them, I wouldn't either if I was there. Why fix something that isn't broken? You're making billions of dollars.
Yeah.
But now they're starting to get pushed, and so you see that Google's becoming more and more social in nature. That's why they've released Google SideWiki, which is, for those familiar with it, is a tool that comes up on the left of any site that you visit. It'll show previous visitors to that site what their thoughts are. You can even embed a video on the side of that. It's called Google SideWiki. They've also launched Google Buzz, which is their attack on Twitter. Obviously, they had launched Google Wave, which was supposed to be the 21st version of email. But Byron, to the words that you used earlier, that was probably a little too complex. And instead of being cutting edge, it was bleeding edge. It was, it's not for the masses. So it hasn't caught on. It might be what we actually need, but it's too obtuse. It's too difficult for us to kind of comprehend that. But we are seeing that they do. If you hit the right server, you can see that Twitter kind of feeds stuff into some of the Google searches. Then also on Facebook, some of that's back end powered by Bing. You'll see, hey, this is powered by Bing. So you're starting to see that crosses over. But Facebook definitely understands that one of their major revenue streams is possibly and potentially going to be search. And that's why they haven't sold out to Google or other bidders like Microsoft. They sold 1.6% of the company. But they want to go for some of those big billions of dollars on the search side, because it makes all the sense in the world to where if I do a search, I care less about the algorithm. So I'll still get that today. I'll get the organic and paid search results. But then also it'll show me, hey, of your social network, here's what they've purchased and here's what they've done. And then, Byron, to your point, it's going to be up to us as individuals, also with the help of the social networking platforms like a Facebook, to figure out, I don't want to see all 1,500 of my friends' opinions. I want to see, these are the people I trust, so these are the ones I want to see their opinions on.
Eric, before we take the break, I want to talk with you when we come back from the break about what's happening in the education world and what you see as potentially good investments to make in yourself in a down economy, particularly what's happening in the digital space with education. I also want to challenge you on some life tips, possible revelations that might involve social media. So we'll have some fun over there, and I also want to chat with you a little bit about some tools and technology that you must have reviewed, I'm sure. So back in a second, everybody. Look forward to another few minutes with Eric after the break.
Life Tips will be right back after this short break.
Hey, have you got that number for Jerry's Pizza?
Look it up on localpages.com.
Localpages.com. Well, what if I wanted a business number in Miami?
Localpages.com.
Can people find your business online? Be seen with localpages.com on every local listing in all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, MSN, and Ask. With over 6 billion quality searches a month and bids starting as low as 1 cent, get connected with local consumers at the exact moment that they're looking for you.
San Francisco, Green Bay, London.
I told you. Localpages.com.
List your business on localpages.com now and get $100 in free local advertising. LocalPages.com, bringing your neighborhood to you.
Charles, come on up and tell us about the great ROI we're getting from RevenueWire.
Thank you. Since I signed up with RevenueWire, conversions have increased dramatically. RevenueWire has an integrated shopping cart called SafeCart that offers highly accurate sales tracking, boosting our conversions through the roof. And now that they've added multiple international currencies to SafeCart, we're looking forward to seeing significant increases in our overseas sales of PC utility software from LavaSoft, PC Tools, Pareto Logic, and AvonQuest. With up to 75% commission, real-time sales tracking, free in-depth sales analytics and reporting tools, campaign optimization resources, and now weekly payments for top-performing affiliates, our sales are climbing higher and higher, thanks to RevenueWire.
Find out more at RevenueWire.com.
Are you an affiliate? If yes, you'll pay me. No ifs, ands, or maybes. Get paid daily. Make a mad dash. Sign up as a flash. Quickly convert the click into cash. Affiliate marketing network is first place. I cut to the chase. It's all performance based. Listen to what I'm telling you, cause this what you better do. Join as a publisher and maximize your revenue. Think we agreed that money is what you need. Indeed, you can get paid for sales and leads. Not one thing lacking. Don't get it cracking. Even comes with state of the art tracking. Where did it start? You can do it a couple ways. 866XY7Pays. It's code free. Tell me what you waiting on. So log on to XY7.com.
Search for solutions Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the Internet Marketing Channel, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And now back to Life Tips. Making your life smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Here are your hosts.
Eric, back with you. Thanks again for being on the show today.
No, thanks. It's been great.
We got more taxing questions for you, so we'll keep it going over here. Let me first ask you about the education world. Now, in my humble opinion, we're in a real crunch right now in that, in general, universities and programs around the country are in a pickle. It's very difficult to pull people out of the digital revolution happening and take the time to go back and create textbooks and criterion to educate people on things that are changing so fast and so quickly. By the time you turn it into an academic, a course, it's too old and antiquated. What's happening in your space over at Holt International School of Business, a master's degree in digital program? And what are your thoughts on that challenge that I presented to you, namely, how do you educate in a turbulent, changing digital marketplace?
Yeah, no, these are great questions and ones we wrestle with at the Holt International School of Business. And it's interesting, we just launched the Masters of Digital Marketing program, which will start here in August. And it's a year-long program that's just focused on teaching people, here's how you use search engine optimization, here's how you use paid search, contextual placement, mobile, social media, augmented reality. And so this stuff is moving so fast. We actually have now a master's degree that you can get in that specifically. And so we wrestle with these questions all the time. It's not like the way that you and I grew up going to university from a standpoint of a lot of the professors that we use, like myself, you have to be in the space and in the external world because the stuff moves so fast, you have to have your hands on it. So a lot of the professors that we use are actually from the business world and in the business world. The other thing that's interesting is that what I want to make sure that that universities don't do is you see this huge shift because it's so much more profitable to teach everything online and where you don't have a professor and you don't have that kind of classroom experience, is that you still need that at some level. Some people that can't go to class, that's understandable. That's what those online programs were originally designed for. But to specifically get to the point is that we have actually have campuses in London, Cambridge, San Francisco, Dubai, and also in Shanghai, because as most what's prominent in the news now is if you look at China with their restrictions is that their main search engine is not Google, it's Baidu. Their main social network is not Facebook. You know, they have a couple that they use, one of them being QQ, which is very prominent. And so it's a whole different market. So the kids have to learn that and understand that, that these markets are different when you go geography to geography, even in a digital world. So hopefully my hope is that most of the traditional colleges and universities definitely bring in some augmentation, but also don't lose sight of the fact that some of the main constructs still hold true even in a digital world. So it's imperative to make sure that we have this group learning and that you do sometimes have that classroom setting.
Tell us about the digital program itself. I have lots of questions, but some of the highlights might be is the curriculum the same and traditional? Is it, you know, weekly classes, daily classes? Is it online? Is it in classroom? Are you changing the way that you're presenting things with guest speakers or specialists and topics? You mentioned a one-year program. Are you actually getting a master's degree? So there's about 5 or 10 questions you could poke away at, maybe with some bursty answers.
Yeah, no, it'd be a one-year program. There is classroom activity, but a lot of the activity is actually dealing with real-time case studies that companies are wrestling with. So that it works well for the companies because they have problems that they kind of outsource to a couple of our teams. And so we have teams of five, and they get several assigned to the same problem. So even if you have one team that might not be stellar, you're going to have at least a couple that are. So from a company standpoint, it's great. From the student standpoint, it's great because they're working on real-world problems. They interact with the companies, so they get to know, so potentially hiring once they get out. So it allows to keep the curriculum fresh as well. Also, the students help engage from a standpoint of, and some of this stuff is so new that we're going to be testing it as well. We don't know what is going to work and what's not going to work. But part of it is really to figure out, get the students engaged to where they're actually providing some of the content for years down the road, for 1 to 2 years down the road, even though it'll change. It's like instead of having a case study from Harvard from 20 years ago, it's let the kids kind of help engage and help to form these case studies to where they're pulling out examples that are happening in real time. And what's interesting to those students will probably be interesting to other students. So it's trying to, quote, unquote, eat your own proverbial dog food. So it'll be really intriguing. Also, one thing that I think we'll see change, like we talked about ratings, is that you'll see more and more schools start to put up online ratings. And so we're working on how do we figure that out to where they can rate the different classes, rate the schools. I mean, you have Rate My Professor, which is the third party, but how do all these universities then start to take that real-time feedback and adjust what their core offerings are? One other thing, I'm kind of spitting all this out at once because this stuff really excites me, but I talk a lot about e-readers, which at first people are like, well, what the hell? How are those social? It's just an e-reader. But the beauty of those e-readers, which is phenomenal, is that when you and I went to school, we'd walk into the used bookstore and have our fingers crossed that the book we were buying was by someone that was smart, hopefully neat, highlighted what they needed to highlight that was correct, and there was a smart student that had the book before us. But with the potential of e-readers, when I'm talking about e-readers, I'm talking about the Amazon Kindle, we're talking about the Sony e-reader, you're talking about the iPad that's coming out here August 4th, I think it is it allows you to kind of go in, all this data is aggregated, and you can say, I just want all the notes from the 4.0 student. Mm-hmm. And then also as a professor or whoever wrote that textbook is asking, hey, can you please give me all the highlights and the notations from the book? Now, we're not there yet because I actually asked Amazon for that because we're revising Socionomics, and they looked at me like I was a deer in the headlights. But mark my words that 1 to 2 years from now, that's going to be the beauty of that is that you can adjust the book. Not only that, is that this stuff's digital, so you can change the content during the semester if you needed to.
Don't you think that the way that we're teaching, the content of what we're teaching, the information that we're provided is destined to change quickly, and I can't believe it hasn't changed quicker. But some of the points you've mentioned there, you know, I want to see the notes from a 4.0 student. You know, I want to see things that are highlighted. I want to see group source perception of what's hot and what's not. You know, I want to take a look at a book of somebody that highlighted something and aced the exam. You know, I mean, aren't we getting to an age where that information has got to come at us quicker and faster and easier?
It has to, and it hasn't happened yet, so it's more surprising that it hasn't happened yet. But, I mean, this stuff sometimes, these radical shifts, take a little bit of time, and universities and colleges, God bless us, are never really at the forefront of some of this stuff. But that's what excites me, that we have, like, this Masters of Digital program. Wharton also is getting engaged, where they have a whole consortium that they are focused on web aspects. And so some of the stuff is intriguing. If you look at NYU, Stern School of Business, I was just up there speaking to their students. Scott Galloway was the founder of Red Envelope, which is a very popular online commerce site. And so he runs a luxury lab series in there where he'll bring in guest speakers and have the MBA students sit there, and also have one of them was just having 60 representatives from luxury brands that sat in there. And so they all listened and kind of did some shared learning. So we're starting to see these changes, and hopefully we hit that proverbial tipping point where it hyper-accelerates stuff. But hopefully Holt's at the forefront of this, and hopefully all the other major universities follow here quickly.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk for a second about social media tools, monitoring social media conversations, learning what people are saying in the marketplace. What are some of your favorite tools? What do you see happening in the marketplace that allows you to really use social media intelligently?
I think some of it depends on where you are in terms of your size of your business. If you're fairly small or just an individual, then you can get by with just using tools like Google Alerts, and also you can use tools like Yahoo Site Explorer. Yahoo Site Explorer allows you to see how many people are linking into your site or into your blog, whatever you're running, and you can see, okay, I'm getting links from all these different constituencies, and you can also look at your competitors that are out there. You can use the search tool on Twitter to see if there's any conversation that's happening out there. Just type in your brand name or your individual name if you're curious about your own vanity and figure out what's being said about you. So there's some definitely free tools that'll definitely get you by if you're a smaller player. As you move and need to have some more workflow issues and also track some of the stuff a little better and more in a more robust fashion, is that you look to tools like Radiant 6. They're out of Canada. They're probably the gold standard right now. But we'll see in time some of the other bigger players like SAP and Oracle, they're starting to write some different coding that allows them to have similar tools that then works with your current existing systems, like your CRM system. So it makes it a little easier to deal with. But those are my things right now. But whatever tool you have, because what's in me is that you'll say, hey, you need to listen first. I always say it's what I have in the book is the social media escalator. It's listen. What's being said about you, your company, your brand, interact, so that's starting to join the conversation. Then the third thing is probably the most important is reacting. How are you adjusting your product and service based on what's being said? What do people like? What don't they like? Are you adjusting your service? And the fourth thing is then to sell. A lot of people make the mistake of jumping in and trying to sell within social media right away, and that never works. It's analogous to me walking into a party and walking up to a group of friends that I, or not friends, but people that I don't know and saying, hey, I'm Eric Qualman. I'm going to talk to you for 10 minutes. Here's my business card about why I'm great. That's socially unacceptable. It doesn't work. It doesn't work in the online world either, but yet we forget these things when we hop online. But so it's listen, interact, react, and sell. And for most people on this call, it's probably not news. And when I talk to people, it's like listening first. They're like, yeah, we've heard that before. And I don't blame them. It's like, oh, listening. Who doesn't know that? But then when I ask them, do you provide your CEO with a listening report, a weekly report that shows, we've looked at everything and summarized it down to one page. Here seems to be the main things that we're doing well, and here's the main pain points, and also doing the exact same thing for the competition. When I ask that, 90% of the people aren't supplying that to their top-level executives. And that's the quickest way to get them to understand that this is a different ROI, that this is a living, breathing thing, and it touches every facet of your business, social media does. And so these types of reports are invaluable from the information they give, but they're also invaluable from the standpoint if they give you an executive buy-in, because they start to see the light that this stuff is much bigger than anything they've probably come across.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the listening aspect in terms of how you're driving your content strategy. You know, it just seems remarkable to me, and we have another company called Idea Launch, which is a content marketing agency, and, you know, understanding what the wants and needs of your customers are seems fairly logical, and, of course, delivering it to them in a compelling and engaging way is the other part of the content marketing puzzle. But this listening aspect is really difficult. You know, think about it. You know, other than SurveyMonkey, you know, our traditional surveys of, were you happy with our products and services? You know, did we deliver it in a satisfactory manner? You know, would you buy from us again? Would you refer to it? That is like dinosaur age, you know, as far as I'm concerned. You know, and I think it's really, really hard to bridge that gap between listening in the traditional sense that we've had in existence and truly listening to conversations happening offline, you know, people referring a company or a service to a friend, you know, true validation. Aren't we going to need to step that up a little bit, particularly the listening aspect of things and gathering data? And do you have any tips on how to do that?
Yeah, no, I mean, you are spot on that this stuff needs to take the next four steps, not even just the first step, in terms of listening, try to figure out all this noise, especially for major brands. There's so much noise that's out there, and how to disseminate, okay, this person is, and they're looking at doing that from a standpoint of the tool. They're trying to be more robust from a standpoint of, okay, this person's a quote-unquote troll. They actually probably don't even use your product. They just kind of negatively comment on anything on the web. So try to avoid spending too much time on this person because their problem is probably not as legitimate as some other folks that you have out there.
Yeah.
Kind of giving you some of the tools are getting robust from the standpoint of, like, Rating Six can tell you, hey, this person has X amount of followers or this person has X amount of influence, because followers doesn't mean influence. Mm-hmm. So it is super tricky, and there's going to be people that are much smarter than myself to try to figure out exactly how do we give tools that help with that, but also a lot of it comes down to just human beings. If you have the right amount of talent at your organization to handle the stuff that's coming in, is that it will be figured out over time. I think that what you guys do at Life Tips is great from a standpoint of you provide real value in terms of producing content out there that's a value add, and it's kind of getting that inbound marketing model to where all of a sudden you write some robust content for your clients or yourself, and it comes in, and you can see it being passed around like never before. Mm. You can see, okay, this article seemed to resonate. This is what 90% of the people tweeted about or 90% of the people highlighted in Delicious, and so let's write more of that for this particular subject or this particular company.
Mm-hmm. We've really been studying that, and that's interesting. I want to have you single-handedly in one big swoop think about a solve a world problem for Life Tips and imagine in your mind with all of your research that you are just going to completely change the world in about 10 seconds from now. Are you ready?
No pressure.
So imagine, Eric, that Life Tips drives over 1 million monthly visitors. We host a radio show, of course, that we're on right now. We have fans and people that really like what we do. We offer free book publishing services for these great writers that create this content. We've got an interesting business program for businesses that allow us to help them build a tip and advice center for their website and run promotions on Life Tips and be the exclusive in that topic. Really cool business model, right? But
the readers,
I think, deserve something better than what they're getting right now. And the readers are the community. They're the people that have come to Life Tips saying, I want to make my life better. You know, please make my life better. So they're landing, you know, about 93% of our traffic, strangely enough, arrives on the inner tip sites on Life Tips, right? So somebody lands on the dating site or the running site or the garden site or whatever it is, and there they are. There's hundreds of tips available for them and a book they can buy. But I think that we can develop something better. Over the years, we've tried a way to, like, have our readers save tips and roll them up into a PDF ebook instantly that they could pass around or put together themselves. We've veered away from, you know, user generated content at Life Tips because we wanted our content to be really good, you know, really valuable and sort of certified by the guru and the expert in that topic.
But I just have a feeling that in a matter of seconds from now, you are going to come up with the next thing that will make Life Tips the most unbelievably crazy thing in the world. I'm ready for it. What is it?
Oh, man, I guess what I'm trying to think of is that if there's a, I don't know if this is for Life Tips, and
yeah.
It could be or it could not be, but you guys have all this expert advice on all the tips. Is it, do you open it up from a standpoint of, there's Encyclopedia Britannica has her hard and fast. So if you look at Wikipedia and Britannica, is it, mm-hmm. You know, there's always debate as, you know, as the content expert on Wikipedia. And I always argue that if it's a big topic, I'd always go with Wikipedia because it's got enough people that are vetting it out. If it's a smaller topic and only have two or three people, I'll take the people at Britannica. But Britannica's opened up their they have a wiki functionality, so they kind of mix both. But it says, hey, this has been reviewed and approved on this side. In terms of, you could look at that model from that standpoint in terms of, can you take advantage of the reader that some of them have some expertise to put it out there. But jumping even one step forward is, I mean, geo-targeting is huge, but no one's really tackled yet. There's Foursquare and all that fun stuff. But when we're talking about reviews, is like, how does Life Tips somehow get in? Everything's going to have to be reviewed.
Yeah.
And so if Life Tips has experts, which they do, on certain things, is that do they have that bigger stamp of approval? So that's part of the model. But also, too, is do they look at, when I'm exiting, no one's nailed this yet, when I'm exiting the hotel, if I could get something on my smartphone that says, did you stay at this hotel, and answer this 1 to 3 questions. And so who knows, maybe Life Tips expertise is, we're going to work with companies that, instead of giving the 20-page question that's going to happen if a company produces it,
mm-hmm.
We're going to figure out what's the most salient pieces for any user for that particular vertical, because that's where it's going, to where it's going to push to your smartphone and say, hey, you just left this hotel, can you please take 60 seconds to fill this out, not take 5 minutes to fill out this piece of paper survey and you might win $50, because no one's going to fill that card out. We don't, because we have it today. But if it's made easily on my smartphone and it's really only 1 to 3 questions, the beauty is going to be which company can figure out what are those 3 questions that need to be answered.
Yeah, there's something here, and the reviews might be the critical element of it. I mean, you know, wouldn't you love to know, you know, that if you stay at the Boston Harbor Hotel, we're both from the Boston area, it's really windy at night down there, so you should bring your windbreaker no matter what time of year it is, right? So is
right.
That a tip? Is that a Life Tip? Is that, you know, is it, sure, it's for that hotel, but, you know, and is there some creative way, you know, that you could just easily enter something into Life Tips and get the tip result, you know, that was either crowdsourced or brought in.
Right.
You know, it seems to me that that's what publishers like us need to do, right? Best asset is their readers, right?
Right. Yep.
And it doesn't mean that, you know, the New York Times should have, you know, its readers start to write articles. That's not what I'm talking about. It's a crowdsourcing of another dimension, particularly when it comes to tips, right?
Right.
Tips are beautiful things. They save time. They're sassy. You know, I look at the advent of Twitter, and I'm just saying, gosh, you know, wouldn't it be cool if Life Tips were the person that had tips? What if everybody were writing tips on Twitter, right? What if there was a Life Tips, you know?
Huge.
And it's like, so you're reading your screen all day, and then someone's got tips. And by the way, there's a limit with how many tips people have, because not everybody knows everything about everything, you know? So you're capped out.
I'm getting excited just talking about this right now, that you guys have the expertise from, like you said, is that it's like, here's the quick tip. People love it. And if I'm got that baby stroller, why don't you guys be the company that's like, here's what we think about when you have your baby. Here's what you need. Here's the strollers. And all of a sudden, it's the individual, the crowdsourced readers give tips on that particular stroller over time. They're like, hey, if you're in a city, the wheels, this is not the stroller for you because the wheels are not designed for you. If you're in a rural area, this is fantastic. But for a city, these things aren't going to be rough enough to handle the curbs.
Right. So you bring it. So you take a generic topic like gardening, you know, which we have a very popular garden site, or you know, another example is our cleaning site. It's like our number one site at Life Tips. I guess not surprising, right? How do we get red wine stain out of a carpet, right? So, but yep. then we have a new feature in that we've brainstormed here, and the new feature is let's literally go out and list every single product, right, related to cleaning. Let's somehow access all cleaning products, or the top 200 cleaning products, right? And,
right.
and say one of them is, you know, that simple green, I think it is, you know, that green, the green spray, you know, that is the miracle cleaner, right? So now you do a search at LifeTips for that product, and then it shows all kinds of reviews that anybody's ever written about that product. Right, so you're crowdsourcing reviews of products and separating the apples and oranges. Do you think that could work?
I think it could. I think the winner is going to be able to figure that out and also figure out, one, there might be, because you've got stuff like TripAdvisor that's only focused on the travel niche. So I don't know if it's going to be each different vertical has its own review section, like third party like that, or has it become who's the best at the platform that can pull in all this other stuff that's already out there? And that might be the solution.
Yeah.
It's interesting because Bizarre Voice out of Austin, Texas, they do all these ratings. They're more of a back-end power that allows companies to grab that tool and use that tool on their own site.
Mm-hmm.
And so there might be some synergy there as well, depending on, okay, these guys have kind of the tool that's grabbing the ratings, but how do we then repurpose it alongside of our expertise in terms of tips and getting real quick tips that really help that consumer?
Well, I think what we've seen here, Eric, is a good example of how companies need to think about what they sell and what they offer and what their value proposition is. And any company that's not thinking like this, I think to your point a little bit earlier, is probably not going to be around in 3 years from now, right? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
It's that simple, really. You know, how can we embrace, the wants and needs of people to get good information fed into them through their Facebook, through, you know, live information, information from people that they know and trust. And how do we earn that trust with a prospect customer and with an existing customer? How do we get our customers and prospect customers to tell us more about what they want and need? You know, to me, that's the heart of social media, and it's hard to figure that out.
No, it is very hard to figure out, but you're exactly right, is that it's all about this stuff is here. A lot of it's here now, and some of it's coming. Is that the good companies are understanding that. They're not sitting back figuring out what the ROI of social media is. They're digging in and getting into this stuff real quick because they understand that's their people. That's their consumer. It's very analogous to 10 years ago, and there's a huge paradigm shift in terms of search. The good companies didn't sit back and go, do I need to do paid search, or should I do search engine optimization, this organic stuff that I've heard about, that 70% of the clicks in Google are on the free organic middle section of the search results. Good companies just hopped in and started doing it, and they made billions of dollars because they became number one for terms like cheap travel or for cancer relief, and they're able to really win because they realized there was a shift in the way we've always done business as before, and it was time to start addressing it correctly.
I just wanted to thank you again for being on the show today, Eric. It is really a pleasure to have you on the show today.
No, the pleasure's been all mine. This has been, we talked for hours. This has been fun.
Well, the good news is we're in Boston, so let's definitely get together after the show, certainly. But in the future, let's get linked in and plugged in. How can guests get a hold of you, Eric, and who do you want to connect with you?
The best way to get a hold of me is you can go to my blog, socialnomics.com, or if you ever want to just reach out to me directly on Twitter, Gmail, Yahoo, it's always Equal Man. I'm not a superhero in tights. It just happens to be our first initial last name, so it's Equal Man.
Got it. Well, thanks again for being on the show. And what's your next book do you expect to roll out here? Are you working on something big?
So right now I'm working with my publisher, Wiley. We're revising Socialnomics to bring out a revised edition in paperback form. And then next year we'll have another book that's in the digital space and more along the lines of how do you love your customer and have them love you back.
Can't wait for that. That's exactly what we were talking about today, so sign me up for your first signed copy of that.
will do.
Thanks again for being on the show, Eric. Pleasure to have you, and thanks for making the world a little bit smarter, better, faster, and wiser. Until next week, everybody, hope you enjoyed another great Life Tip show. We'll see you next week.